Keep Talking exists to have conversations that might help to make a better society and a better culture. I believe that each guest has important information and stories to make public. This is the Keep Talking podcast. To support it, please take a second and subscribe to the show. It helps to make this content possible. I'd love to maybe start with there and have you share any stories about women who have regretted becoming mothers and segue into additional topics that I know I want to talk about during the conversation too.
You know, it's like a spiral. Each time and each year and each, like when I'm talking to women about motherhood, we will talk later on about these groups that I'm moderating for women who are uncertain whether they want to be mothers or not. It's like a spiral that I'm looking at this topic of motherhood and non-motherhood. And during the last days, I thought once again about something that several of the women who participated in my study said about motherhood being a traumatic experience for them. And it's another dimension of regretting motherhood, because maybe it's one thing to say that you regret it, and it's another thing, it's related, but it's another thing to say that women are coming and saying, for me, it is a traumatic experience. One of the women that I talked to said that she's afraid of forgetting what motherhood was for her at the beginning, because she's afraid that if she will forget, she might do it once again. She might get pregnant once again. So she wants to remember the trauma in order to avoid doing it once again. It's something that most of the time we are not talking about regarding motherhood. She, you know, pronatal societies and pronatal ideology and patriarchy are relying on women to forget things. We can see it also, and I hope it's not a trigger to the audience, but also when women are being sexually abused or something like that, when they are coming forward 10 years later, people are asking, why now? And by saying why now and not understanding this, they're saying, why didn't you forget? Why do you remember? Please forget. Please don't remind us. So I think the system and the social order can continue doing things to women, maybe not only, but here we are talking about women, by relying and asking us to forget things that were hard, traumatic, tragedies, unjust towards us. We are being asked to forget. And the women who regret motherhood are not forgetting. And this is why one of the reasons why they are being punished and treated as monsters and things like that, because they are coming and saying, I remember who I was, and I want to go back in time to the woman I was back then. And society relates to motherhood as like an entrance to a brave new world, something that is beginning. Your life begins now when you are a mother. And these women come and say, no, something ended for us. We want to go back. So these are my thoughts when you're asking me about, you know, another gaze or another dimension of this book, that there are so many layers to it.
Yeah. I know, you know, there's a word that you used there a couple times, at least traumatic. And I know from our first conversation and from listening to other interviews, I think it's important too for the audience to know that in no way are you against motherhood in general. It's more that you are opening up a window into the world of women who do have that regret, and you are bringing up one of the primary taboos in certainly Western culture of the fact that these women are real and they exist, and you document their experience. And maybe the answer to the question I'm going to ask you is what you just said, which is that people, women who do have this regret, are wishing to be able to be who they were prior to having kids. When you use the word traumatic, what specifically, if anything, comes to mind about what it is about becoming a mother that these women who do regret mean when they say that word or use that word traumatic, that it has been and is a traumatic experience for them?
I guess many losses. I feel like that they lost so many things, parts of their identity, many kinds of languages, their autonomy, the body, some certain kinds of relationships, time, liberty. And so when you gather all of this together and you feel that somebody else is like driving the car of your life, or this car, someone else is driving it. So many of them things feel like as if they are going into, how do you say, to the beyond the cliff. So I think that, not that I think, they told me that they lost really precious things for them. And even when they are grandmother and the children are young anymore and they are not depending on them, they still feel as if something was lost and forever. And they would have wanted to live differently. So they lost something. They lost a certain life that they could have lived if they were not mothers. And it's really important what you say, what you said at the beginning of the question. I'm certainly not against motherhood. I guess that there are not enough times that we can, that I can say it, because sometimes that, and I see it happening that I'm saying it, but it's going like into a kind of a filter that it's not being, I'm saying it, but it's not being heard. So I will say it once again, in any case, that I strongly believe that women should become mothers when they deeply want it. And I know that there are many women, of course, that deeply want to be mothers. There is no question about it. I'm talking about something else. I'm talking about that we will have an open space not to become mothers if we don't want to. And I'm talking about truly looking at the heavy and high prices that women are paying after becoming mothers. We owe it to them at least to listen.
Yeah. There's a quote from your book, Regretting Motherhood, that I would love to read and then make a comment. And this is from you, quote, "Women, especially those over the age of 30, are caught within a mind game of threats and warnings. Your time is running out for making a family. You may think that you're not interested in being a mother, but you are wrong. The desire will strike you eventually, but then it will be too late. You are going to regret this." And I know from reviewing our conversation from a year and a half ago that, you know, my understanding in your own life was, I think it was, you phrased it as a quiet knowing or a silent knowing that you had had since you were a teenager that this was not for you. And
to me, one of the great things about the internet and the ability for people like you and I to have a conversation like this is to help people who are in the minority, but are real and are interested in living in accordance with what they really want in life, to be able to discover dialogue like the one we're having today to better give them the information and the courage to live a life that makes sense for them. And I'd love to maybe posit this question for those kind of women, women who are, you know, in their 20s and 30s, who are receiving the sort of fear that I think you were alluding to in the quote that I just read out, who may have a real sense, like it sounds like you did, that this is not for them, but they are getting that message consistently from society that, you know, you think you don't want this now, but you definitely will. How you would address a woman like that, how you would shepherd a conversation with someone like that to tease out what really is best for them as best they can understand it. How would you respond to that?
I will say several things, and each and every one can like pull something out of the things that I'm saying here. I'm just putting it out like in a mess. And I think, first of all, each and every one of us, it might be good to know yourself, to know yourself, what makes you serene, more serene, what makes you miserable, what do you want life to be for yourself? Who are you? Deeply know yourself. And once you deeply know yourself, you can ask question whether motherhood fits in. We do have knowledge about, you know, you can never know what motherhood will be for you, but still you do have a kind of sense from the day-to-day experience. And while when you are in this world already 30 years, 35 years, you have a knowing about yourself. What it's really, I'm saying something so simple, and I know it's so complicated at the same time, but maybe it is simple. Maybe we are making it too complex. It's simple. We do know. And then society comes and say, no, you don't know. We will tell you. We know. We don't know you, but you are a female, so we know you. You must do it because you are a female. But you know you, not only as a female, but, you know, you have an identity. You know yourself. So this is one thing that I will say. The other thing that I will say, it's maybe to deliberate. It's like, so many things are on a scale. What do you specifically prefer? Like living 30 years, maybe not feeling comfortable in your life because you are a mother while you didn't want to be a mother? Or on the other side, the possibility that maybe one day you will regret it. So Which one is like, and each and every one of us has a different answer to this scale. I don't have the answers. I don't have an equation. Like, I don't know the answer, but I'm saying what is on this scale. And the third thing that I will say, that maybe regret is not the worst thing that can ever happen. Maybe there is a demonization of regret, that we are being told that it is the worst thing that can ever happen to a human being. And I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying it's a walk at the park regretting something, but maybe it's not like a total annihilation. Maybe it's something that we can and we do live alongside regret. We have many regrets in life, many. And we live in a society that makes us really scared from regretting. And I think it's a really useful tool in order to align us into this the right social order. So we should look really kind of in a critical gaze towards this demonization and the way that we are society tries to frighten us from regret.
Mm. We touched on this, I think, a little bit in our first conversation about my view that part of the reason this is an important conversation to have and also something that women who may have a pretty strong sense that this is not something that they want in their life, but are scared not to respond to the pressure of society that this will be something you will want as you get older, so you better do this now, is that there aren't, in my judgment, many healthy models for women who opt out of this lifestyle. And I don't know if you've given a decent amount of thought to this, but in putting myself in the mind of somebody who might be stumbling on this conversation, who is leaning towards not having kids, or probably doesn't want kids, or definitively knows that she doesn't want kids, but is lacking healthy scripts for what a flourishing life might look like into her 40s and 50s and beyond without a biological family, how would you respond to that concern? And are there any scripts or models in popular culture or in fiction or in life in general with real women that you would point to as somebody that may be worth consulting to forge one's own path that is an optimistic path, is an exciting life, but does not conform to the standard expectations for a female life in this world?
This is exactly why I'm writing my current my next book these days. I wake up each morning at 5:30 in order to write my next book about elderly women in Israel who are not mothers, and I talk to 25 women. And your question is exactly the reason why I'm writing it, because I wanted it's not that I looked for I didn't need a role model, because as I told you, for me it was like a silent knowing. Nothing matters for me, even if I don't see women in sitcoms and movies and books. For me, there is no other way but living the way I'm living as not a mother. But I know that there are many women who need this roadmaps, alternative roadmaps or additional roadmaps on how to live. And I am also writing about how to die in this book. So I'm writing it these days, and I hope it's going to be published first in Germany, in German. And I truly hope that it will be also translated into English once again. And for now, I know that there are elderly women out there who are not mothers, who are living quite well. I'm not going to portray here like a perfect image. I don't believe in that. We are human beings. It's not like everything is wonderful or everything is awful. Of course, elderly women who are not mothers experience also hardships, of course. But there are, I guess that if women will write something on Facebook or, I don't know, TikTok on or Instagram, I don't know, and look for women who are out there who are not mothers, they will find. They will find. But someone to talk to. But I still, after saying that, I still think that even if I will relate to self not as a researcher. Now I'm just not a mother, and I want to talk to someone. And I will meet a woman, she's 70, in her 70s and she's not a mother. And she will say to me something. She will tell me about her life, about her experience of not being a mother. And it doesn't necessarily mean anything about me. Even if I would have read, like, and I read many articles about elderly people who are not parents and, you know, there are a lot of studies and they're in the media. Like, a new research found that 70% of the people who are not parents are really happy or really having a good. So does it mean anything about me? Will I be the 70%? Will I be in the 30%? I don't know. It's like, it's an interesting study, but okay. Now I have my life to live. So, and I also don't like this study that that are saying, like, a new study has found that people who are not parents are happier than parents. I don't want to be in this fight. I'm not in this game. I don't want to be in this game of who has bigger. everything should be accepted. Different people has different needs, different personalities, different dreamings, dreams and yearnings and abilities and disabilities, and everything should be open. And then you need to, you not need, but really helpful to go, as I said before, to within and just, who am I? In this society, who am I?
I think that's an excellent point that needs to be at the forefront of this conversation. And yet, in the spirit of honesty, and as you alluded to earlier, there is no utopia on this planet. There are trade-offs in life, and no matter what path one chooses for oneself, it isn't without its hardships and pain. What have you heard from these women that are elderly? And I remember you mentioned this during our first conversation. I thought it was totally brilliant to give voice to women who were aging and were older, who had decided not to be moms. What stands out to you both, you know, and this may be preliminary to some degree, as I'm not sure if the book is done or not, but in terms of the you know, what they view as a real victory in maintaining their state as not being moms and any hardships. I'm sure, a very complex story that has its advantages and disadvantages. What can you say to an audience that you think might be important at this point?
I'm still digging in. I must say. I will say something on the surface because I really need to understand it more myself because before I'm saying anything, and it's really on the surface. It's quite like superficial. This is how we say on the surface, superficial. Yeah, it's I'm just saying that no one of whom I talked to told me that she regrets not being a mother, not even one of them. But it doesn't mean that it's not sad for them sometimes. And also sometimes they feel relieved that they are not mothers. And they are saying that if they could go back in time, they would have done it again. But it's like it's but and but and but and but. And for me, it's really logic. And I really appreciate the honesty of not portraying like one-dimensional answer for my questions. And this is being human. And I don't think that there is anything that it's like one dimension. But none of them told me that it was a mistake for her. It's not that I'm saying there are around the world women who didn't become mothers and they do regret it. I'm not saying that, but in my study, none of them said that. And I think that one of the things that it's really, I'm really going with it along I started this study in 2017. But, you know, there was a COVID and situation in Israel. It was like delayed. And many of them said in different phrasing and words that they didn't exactly choose not to be mothers, but they never felt that it was burning from inside to become mothers. And they made like, they took turns in junctions that each time got them further and further away from motherhood. So I think that the saying that I was not in a state that I will do anything to become a mother because it was not burning inside of me. And you know, at the same situation, there are so many women also, especially in Israel, that even if they don't have a partner and even if they have a fertility, you know, hardship, they will go through walls in order to become mothers. So at the same conditions, there are women who will do anything to become mothers, and there are women who will say, no, no, it's not, I don't want it so passionately in order to do anything for me. And so it's not a kind of choice, but it's a kind of, I don't know, tending towards not.
Makes sense. And I know that I just learned this yesterday, and I alluded to this earlier in our chat today, that I didn't know that you conducted these conversations with women who were wrestling. They're kind of at this, at or near, it sounds like a decision point for whether or not they want to become moms. And my understanding, based on what I heard you say in this interview, is that you've been doing this, I think, once a year for many years, where you facilitate these conversations as women try to tease this out. And this is a very broad question, but what have you learned that might be helpful for people who hear this conversation about, you know, questions to ask oneself? We've talked about this a little bit today, but my understanding as well is that some of these women who come and have these conversations with you decide not to be moms, and some decide to become moms. So, and again, I'm sure this is rather complicated as well because everyone is different, but what's salient to you from all of your years of conducting these conversations that might be helpful for a general audience to learn about that they may not know or you think is important for them to know?
Oh, first of all, yeah, I'm since 2015, each year I moderate a group for women. Once a year, I moderate a group for women here in Israel who are uncertain whether they want to be mothers or not. We meet for 10 weeks, once a week, 10 sessions. And, you know, we sit in a circle, and like 12 women each year. And I say to them that here is a space where we give respect to uncertainty. We live in a society that pushes us all the time to decide and conquer and run and to the next station and to the next level, also all the time to improve and to run towards something and to accomplish all the time, accomplish, and also all the time to prove and improve, and you know, all the time. And I'm saying to them, here we don't know. We just like stay in place and say, I don't know. And we will going to respect it because this is, once again, another human experience that is being eliminated. It's like in a very capitalist society that you all the time and need to go to the next level, and you don't stop, just run all the time, run to the next target. And so first of all, it's just, let's respect the condition of not knowing. And it's very helpful for them to hear more women who are saying, I don't know as well. And just being able to talk about it, listen to other women. And I have, like, each session, I have a question for them, and we work with this question. So one of the questions is, I asked them to, like, to draw a kind of a roadmap of their uncertainty. What are the materials that in for each and every one of them in this uncertainty? And we talk about regret, the fear of regret, because this is something that it's very, very important to deconstruct in a society that makes us afraid of regret. And I asked them also a question about what are the benefits of being uncertain? What will be the price for you to saying farewell and goodbye to uncertainty?
Mm.
This is we talk about it at the session one before the last one, before we say goodbye to the group. I'm talking to them about, and I'm inviting them to think about saying goodbye to the uncertainty. And I learned from them that, you know, being uncertain might be really noisy and really, for some of them, it's really an agony not knowing. And it's all the time, like there is a cacophonic, like it's a noise all the time. But for others, it might be a really comforting place to stay. Because when you are uncertain about something, everything remains open.
Hmm.
You don't need to, like, if you are uncertain and now you decided that you want to be a mother, so now you need to do some steps towards it. So, different things. And also, if you decided that you don't want to be a mother, you need to do some things in order to, like, be steady at your decision and to live your. And when you are uncertain, everything is open. And I really understand why for several of them, they don't have the motive to decide. And that's fine as well.
Mm.
If you, I don't know how to say it, but like just being there. And accepting that you don't know.
Yeah. One of my favorite sections from our first conversation was when you discussed, after I brought this up, the idea that not having kids was selfish. And I thought you gave a brilliant response to that very common retort when people may indicate that they're not interested in having kids. And I know when I have conversations about this subject, just in my own personal life, that outside of the selfishness topic, one of the common responses I will get from friends or people that I know is that, how will you find meaning and purpose in your life? And this may dovetail into the answer I remember you giving from 18 months ago, was that in all of history until recently, kids were not brought into this world to provide meaning and purpose to their parents' life. That was not really why, in many circumstances, why kids were born. I'd love to put that idea to you too, to get your thoughts on in terms of the meaning and purpose of life question, which I'm sure you've gotten many times in your career about how one can have a meaningful and purposeful life. Without having kids. And it's a subject I don't think we've talked about directly before. And I'd love to put that to you to get your current thinking on that subject in general for the audience.
Wow. First, I will say that I would want to live in a world where I can be not a mother and I will come back home. And I'm not sure if we talked about this. It's like a thing that I'm talking about all the time. Did I talk to you about the airplane? the paper. Okay. So I would want to come back home and to draw a spot on my wall and just throw a paper airplane to this dot on the wall. And this is the meaning of my life.
Hmm.
And I'm not even trying to improve. I'm just missing it all the time. I'm throwing it and I miss it all the time. And I would want to live in a world where if that's my purpose in life, then that's my purpose in life. Or I don't know what my purpose in life. I don't know what the meaning of it. I was brought into this world. My parents didn't ask me. I'm here. I'm trying to enjoy to do things that make me feel that interest me, that give me some kind of pleasure. And this is all there is. So I'm not saying there are people who are like searching for meaning and for purpose, of course. And there are people I want also to suggest that there is no, I don't know, it's a kind of existential answer for it. But I can say that, of course, that if people are interested in having meaning in their life, of course, there are so many other ways rather than having children. Of course. I'm writing now the chapter about continuity and generativity and how can we do things in our lives to the next generation. And this is what parenthood is like nurturing the next generation. And there are so many other ways to do things for ourselves, for the next generation, without being biological parents. It'd be teachers and work with children and like innovation in science for the next generation and art and music and writing books. You don't need to be a genius. You know, also, each and everyone in the audience maybe have a thought now about someone in their life who touched them, who got them to think differently, or they aspire to their way of looking at things and they do, like, they follow their steps. It can be like someone from school or something, someone from when you, like, in a sports team, someone who gave you something from him or her that went on into you. And we can do things. It's like we can do things like that to each other. I don't like, there's all the time on my tongue the word inspire, but I don't want to use this. But this is the idea that you put something from you inside of someone else, a moral thing, something that make you feel nourished. And we can do it. And it can be small things. It doesn't have to be like winning a Nobel Prize.
Yeah.
I hope that I succeeded in explaining. It's a bit difficult for me in English, but yeah.
I understand. And, you know, I know just from, I want to read these because I went over last night some of the comments. I think I mentioned this before we started recording, but our conversation is one of the most popular that I've done on this show out of more than 110 episodes. And I wanted to read some of the comments, a few of the comments that I've gotten on that conversation to voice to people that, you know, you and I will never meet, but nonetheless have been exposed to your work and your ideas. And here are a few. Quote, "Thank you, Orna, for speaking for all of us. I knew very early in my youth I didn't want to become a mother, even though I loved children and babysat my nieces and nephews with great joy. I'm 44 now, and I can't tell you how many times I returned home after visiting friends with children, and while being greeted by my dog, I said these words, 'Thank you, God, that I was allowed to choose.' because previous generations didn't have that choice, and we are truly blessed with this gift of freedom. Here's another one, quote, I am a 36-year-old married woman from one of the South Asian countries, Nepal, who has decided not to be a mother. It was absolutely delightful and informative to listen to this discussion. I hope the book she is talking about, an elderly women who don't become mothers, will be available in English in the future, as I would love to read these experiences, as one of the things I keep hearing is how I'm going to regret this decision as I get older. But first, I am asking my cousin to get me the book, Regretting Motherhood, from the USA, as I couldn't find it in the bookstores of Kathmandu. Wow. And then here's a third quote, your book was life-changing. Thank you. I have done a lot of interviews and a lot of conversations in the last month and a half or 2 months about men specifically in society, and some of the data that is coming out about how so many men are not doing particularly well in modern life, but particularly at the bottom of society. And I don't think we talked about this in our first conversation, and we haven't today, about men who decide to not have kids. And I know that wasn't the focus of your first book, but if I remember correctly, you were considering that at one point, or that you may have done some interviews with men who decided not to become parents. I have this conversation all the time with guys that are, you know, roughly my age, who are debating whether to have kids or not. And I wanted to put that subject to you as well, to in a broad way, have you address anything that you've discovered from conversations or interviews with men that who have not decided to have kids, and admittedly recognizing that the obstacles that often need to be overcome for men who decide not to become dads is often far easier than those that face women. But nonetheless, I think it can be a challenge as well for some men in our cultures to be true to themselves, if that's who they decide they are, to not have kids. What comes to mind, if anything, from just casual conversations, from formal interviews, from your research, that, again, if there are men who are watching this who feel like they may be personally addressed by this conversation, who don't have anyone in their life who are as open as you are about living in uncertainty and going one's own way in accordance with their own preferences, what comes to mind, if anything, that might be useful to convey to men as well? And maybe it's very similar to what you've already noted about the women that you've worked with, but I wanted to make sure I put that to you to give an opportunity to talk about this same subject as it relates to men in general.
Well, it's a big, but before I will share my thoughts about what you said, I want to say two things. First of all, thank you for reading me some of the comments. It's really, really special moment for me to also to know that this topic reached Kathmandu. It's really, really special for me. And I would like also to say that women in previous generation, some of them didn't become mothers. I'm saying all the time, we didn't invent anything. Mm-hmm. You know, along the history, there is a history of women who didn't become mothers. And I also have, I'm planning to write a chapter about women who are not mothers along the history. And there are books about it. If you want, then later on you can send me by mail and you can put it in the, I will give you some names of books that we will see that there is a legacy. And we are not the first ones who are not mothers along the history. We are being told so many times that it's like a new and like a spoiled invention of the me generation and individualistic society. This is the outcome of But as I said, we didn't invent anything. So it's really important to put us in a in historical context, and maybe it will be relieving or important to women to know that there is there are so many women before us. Okay, so this is one thing. And about men, I'm not sure if we talked about it last time about did I mention the men that I interviewed who regret becoming fathers?
I don't think so.
Okay, so I interviewed 10 men who regret becoming fathers. And out of the 10, 8 said to me that they didn't want to be fathers. They didn't want to have children. And the only reason that they became fathers was because they wanted to be with a woman who wanted to be a mother.
Yeah.
Because they were in a relationship with a certain woman. 8 of them said that. Not with the same woman, but each and every one of them were in a relationship with a woman who wanted to become a mother, and they wanted to be with her. And this is the only reason why they agreed to become father. And now, from retrospective look at it, they regret it. Some of them are divorced, you know, so they are divorced and they regret being fathers. So everything is a mess. And so I heard more men who are saying that they became fathers because they wanted to be in this relationship. And I think this is something that another thing that is not being talked about enough.
Mm.
About the need of men as well to be in a relationship. We are the, you know, the all the stereotypes, and it's like women are haunting and running after men, and they want to get married. And once they have the party before the marriage, they are being treated by their friends as if it's the last night out of jail. And this is what we are being told, that women want to be in a relationship, men don't. They are running away from it. They want to be, and everything exists here as well. And so many men want to be in a relationship. And we can also see it at like the second chapter in Hebrew. There is a saying like Perek Bet, it's like the second chapter. When people are getting divorced or they are becoming a widow. Many men are getting into another relationship weaker than women. And many of them would like to live together with their partner, while many women are saying, enough, I want to live. We can have a relationship, but I want to live apart. It's like living apart together. And this is like so many clues for us that men also want to be involved in relationship, in intimacy. They need these kind of things as well. And I think it's a really Well, I will say it like that, and it's in Hebrew there are nicer words than that, but it's really sad for all of us, these kind of stereotypes. For women, it's unjust for women, and it's unjust for men. And so I think that men might also pay prices for not becoming fathers, and many of them will be treated as really childish, infantile, like having like the Peter Pan syndrome, like being not responsible enough, and they will be judged regarding these stereotypes. And so many men some of them are childish. It's okay as well, I guess. And others, I really have a passion in a lot of things in their life, but they just don't want to be fathers. It doesn't mean anything about not being able to commit to something. And maybe we need to distinguish between being committed and being obligated. Because you can be committed to something from really like a deep passion, but society wants us to be obligated to a certain kind of relationship.
Yeah.
So if you are not proving that you're obligated to something, you are being treated as if you can't be committed to anything.
I think that's a good way to put it. And, you know, to me, I know we're getting towards the end of our time together today, but to me, the big reason or a big reason why I like to do this work is to provide conversations like this for people to better allow themselves to be themselves. And this conversation is a perfect example of that, to help hopefully some people who come across this have the, you know, fortitude and self-insight and self-awareness and support, even if it's digitally, to be who they are and to live that out in accordance with their own nature in whatever way that takes them. And I think that's why, you know, I was so honored last year to talk to you, and I was so interested in your book, and I wanted to have you back on to continue the conversation, because I think it's so important. If it's something that, if human well-being and flourishing is something that, you know, you're interested in trying to promote, then helping people gain the information and courage to live out a life that makes sense to them is extremely important. And it was an honor to do this 18 months ago with you, and it's an honor to do this again now. And I wondered if maybe I could close by just opening up this conversation. I know you've done plenty of interviews about this topic, and you might be the world expert on some of these subjects. Certainly your book, I think, is unique and one of a kind in its popularity and its subject matter even now. I'd love to just ask you if there are any other aspects of this subject, or allow you to answer any questions you wish somebody like me would have asked you that you think is important related to this whole field of inquiry and study, that maybe that might be a great place for us to close.
Look, I think I can, like, for a year I can talk about it and I will still have things to say about it. So each time I'm being interviewed, I'm just like, whatever was brought up, this is what needed to be brought up. And I like, there are so many things that I can say, so that it sums up to, there is no need on my behalf to, I think that the only thing that I would like to say, it's important for me that along the way, when I talk about know yourself, and for me, it's all the time going alongside with knowing the structures of society. Because I don't think the solution will only be from the inner world or the individual. We need to know what is going on. I told you before that I am a political woman. I am a feminist. The social structures, the power that is being laid upon us, intrigues me. I am a sociologist. I don't think that the solution will come only when each and every one of us will know ourselves. This is one thing that I'm saying. But I guess that at the end of our discussion, for me, it's really important not to take the eyes off society. So like, it's a kind of dual direction movement. Like, go within, but don't take the eyes from the ball. And the ball here is society. We need to deconstruct what is going on here. Because, you know, I heard that a TED talk. It's from a different, on a different topic. It's really different, but it's, there is something that is the same. That she was a woman with disability, and she said that no smiling at stairs will make it into a ramp, like a rampa. You know. Mm. So my inner attitude will not necessarily change what is going outside, my personal inner attitude. She's really nice, how really clever how she said it. No amount of smiles will make stairs into a ramp. So, and a positive attitude. So it's a two-direction movement here. And I hope that I will be able to continue and deconstruct this in order that more people will be able to see it. When we are seeing it and understanding it, we have more wider liberty to decide whether we like it, whether we want to. It's like puppets with the strings. So when you see the string, when you know them, you have more liberty to decide whether you like this movement, maybe, or you want to cut this one, or maybe leave this one at the place. You have more. So this is my calling here now. It's important for me not to end our discussion by like a kind of individual message.
Fair enough. Yeah. Orna, it was so good to see you again. And I want to thank you again for all the work you do, and just for giving the time to come back on and talk about this really important subject. And I hope we get to do this again sometime.
I hope as well. And just call me and I will be here for the third time.
Sounds great. Thanks, Orna.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Keep Talking. If you're finding value in this podcast, please consider supporting the show via the links below on Venmo, PayPal, or Patreon. Your support helps to make these conversations possible.